Welcome to this edition of the Beef Roundtable. I'm Dr. Ron Luminager, Beef Extension Specialist here at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana. And I'll be working with my co-host, Bert Rutherford.
And I'm Bert Rutherford, Senior Editor with Beef Magazine. I'm based in Denver, Colorado. Each month on the Beef Roundtable, we discuss current topics of interest to leaders and people in the beef business, really topics that concern all beef producers.
The Beef Roundtable is recorded live and edited to fit the constraints of the program. The programs are available at the Beef Magazine website, iTunes, YouTube.com, as well as BeefRoundtable.com.
Our topic for today's edition of Beef Roundtable is estate planning and succession planning. This is a topic that every farm, ranch, and business needs to take seriously, and I know from past experience with articles that we've run in Beef Magazine, it's a topic that many, many people are interested in. Passing the farm and ranch heritage is a privilege, but it comes with challenges of careful planning to ensure the smooth transition and a sustainable transition. In agriculture, we have many things we cannot control, of course, weather, prices, many other things. But we do have control over a few things, and one of the most important of those is the future of the family business.
Yeah. Our first guest is Kerry Rinker, owner of Rinker Law, PLLC, a national general practice law firm concentrating in food and agricultural law with offices in New York and Illinois. She has deep roots in agriculture, growing up on a purebred Simmental operation in Illinois, and gaining both a BS degree at Texas A&M and an MS in ruminant nutrition from the University of Illinois before going on to law school. Kerry is highly recognized in the ag industry and has received numerous awards from her alma maters, as well as the American Bar Association.
Our second guest is Dr. Paige Pratt. Paige earned a BS in animal science, a master's degree in educational leadership, both of those from Kansas State University, and a PhD in animal science from Texas Tech University. She and her husband, along with her husband's parents, own and operate Pratt Cattle Company, a purebred Angus operation in Southwest Virginia. And she has personally experienced some of the family farm transition issues we're going to talk about today. Paige is a nationally recognized speaker, not only on this topic, but also on other thought-provoking, fun, and engaging topics related to agriculture. Kerry and Paige, let's begin our discussion by talking about the potential confusion surrounding some terminology. Many people have created a will, but is there a difference between creating a will and developing a succession plan or a legacy plan? Are these similar, and how are they different?
Paige, I guess I'll begin that there's a huge difference between developing a will and a succession plan. And oftentimes estate planning and succession planning are confused. They're interpreted as being one and the same when they are very different. Estate planning is really just the paper documents that you can go and sit in my office or any other attorney's office and get your will. You can get maybe some trust, a power of attorney, healthcare proxies, living wills, etc. There's some tax and planning component that comes a part of that. But the more difficult part is actually the succession planning. And I would argue that that is the more, that's the more challenging and more important aspect of transition planning.
I would agree with what Kerry said. It definitely is two different pieces of documentation that allow folks to know what the future of their operation might hold. And so I probably have more experience with the succession planning piece of it, as all of the parents, both my in-laws and my parents, are still living and with us today. And so while the will and the legacy plan is in future, but we spent the majority of our time dealing with the succession planning, and it certainly provides a lot of insight in regards to where are we going. After someone passes, what are the next steps, and not just simply who will get what and how that will transpire, but who will take the reins when the operation passes from one generation to the next.
Well, I've heard comments made that maybe 90% of the family farm businesses fail to go beyond the third generation. And I'm sure that in some cases this is a conscious decision to sell the ranch or the farm, but probably in too many cases we see the farm or the ranch being sold because of a lack of succession planning. Let's begin talking about why estate planning and succession planning are important. Number one, to the future survival of the ranch or the farm business. But secondly, why don't families get it done?
Well, I think as we look at this and as I discuss it with other folks when we were going through the process, if the older generation wants the business to survive beyond them, they need to have a plan. So as we look at the future of the farmer ranch business, and succession planning is obviously, in my opinion, it's the first step before estate planning, because if you think Johnny wants to come back to the farm and farm it, maybe Johnny doesn't have the same intentions that you have for him. And so I think the first step is to have that succession plan put together and help with a facilitator to be able to do that, to know what you want and be able to work through some of those hard questions. You have to plan before you can pass down what you're wanting to give to other folks. And the only way the next generation knows what your future vision looks like is by sitting down and having those conversations. And I think a lot of folks have those conversations with only the folks that are going to be intricately involved in the day-to-day operation. But it's also, and equally important in my opinion, to discuss those goals and values and dreams with the other piece of the family that isn't in the day-to-day operation, because if they don't understand what mom and dad wanted, then it's really hard for them to buy into. They may receive less, or they may not get a piece of land that they thought they should get. But if they understand the future and the goal of what mom and dad have in the back of their mind and why they built the business that they built, then we can surpass some of that conflict when someone does pass away and move towards really working together as a family to make sure that their dreams can stay alive. Go ahead, Carrie.
I'm sorry, one slight difference of opinion. Although I do believe that it's really important for succession planning to be sort of decided upon, I don't necessarily believe that it's a prerequisite to the estate planning, because oftentimes I see that is just put off, and it's so easy to modify as life goes on, right? Because lives change, there's children, people get married, goals change. And I would prefer that people get an estate plan, get those simple documents and set them forth, and then have it be an ongoing conversation throughout the lifespan, right? Talking about that succession planning, and then make amendments to the estate plan. Because I do believe that oftentimes people look at estate and succession planning as being a big burden. Like, look at everything we have to decide whenever we could get a starting space, and then amend things as time goes on.
I think the amendments are an important piece, Carrie. I would agree with that. I think most people, and one of the reasons families don't get it done is because they feel like they're making a forever plan. And what they don't realize is this plan needs to be updated. It needs to be changed as different life events happen. I hate to say this, but we're going to have to agree to disagree, because the succession planning piece is so valuable from the standpoint of, if you truly want an operation, not just a piece of land, but an operation to continue, we have to have that succession plan. Who's going to take the reins? Who's going to get the job done? What jobs are going to happen? Who's going to be involved? How much are they going to get paid? Those are pieces that I think have to come out and be discussed before you even know who will be involved in the day-to-day, because there might be some folks who realize that the expectations of what the parents want is very different than what they want from their personal perspective. And because of that difference, they may choose, even if they've been there for a while, they may choose to opt out of the business. And at that point, that's one of those times where those amendments would certainly come in, and you would have to rethink the direction of your operation. And so I'm with you. But I guess To me, the most important thing is get something put in writing. And so I guess I completely agree with you on that. We have to have something in writing. And the hard part in my mind is all of the little pieces along the way lead to this culmination of this estate succession and estate plan. But ultimately, you know, an attorney could tear a succession plan to pieces without that estate plan, without an attorney working on the pieces to make sure that that what parents really want to have happen has the best chance of happening at the end of the day. And so I think it is really, the biggest thing is to communicate and to have some of those plans not only discussed but put in writing. Because if you can discuss till you're blue in the face, but if they're not in writing, I'm sure you've seen that, Carrie, it really can become a problem.
Let me ask a question about terminology. We're talking about estate planning, we're talking about succession planning, we're talking about transition planning. Are those actually three different legal documents? And how do they differ?
Well, with estate planning, the last will and testament is one legal document that is oftentimes confused with the estate plan, but it is just one legal mechanism for passing down your property after your death. Another legal mechanism is a trust, and a trust can either be revocable or irrevocable. In many cases, I suggest to my clients that they get a last will and testament and a trust. That doesn't fit every farm family, but in some farm families, that's going to be the right mix. And then healthcare proxies, powers of attorneys, these are other documents that are sort of part of an estate plan package, but these are all separate legal documents. I believe what Paige works on with a succession plan, that it is its own document that's completely separate from the trust, the wills, et cetera.
Yes, I would agree, yes.
So does a succession plan, legacy plan, both of you have referred to that as a written document. Is it a legal document?
So as far as the estate planning documents go, the last will and testament and the trust and things along those lines are absolutely legal documents, but they are not public record. And so I just wanted to make that point that it can be amended at any time. Nobody knows about it. It's completely private. But upon your death, the last will and testament becomes public record. However, a trust does not. That's actually one of the reasons why I really loved trust, is because it avoids probate. So farm families that want to use trust are able to do that in a mechanism that is completely private from the public. But those documents are absolutely legal documents, much like a contract would be.
Well, one of the things that I've seen over my lifetime, and I'm not on the legal side, and we've had some deaths in our family, and we've had some land transfer and some farm transfer and that kind of thing. But, you know, what I've seen is that a lot of times, you know, an estate, okay, really breaks families apart, all right, because somebody's disappointed that, you know, they thought they were going to get, you know, I think somebody mentioned, you know, that piece of land or, you know, that tractor or, you know, a set of cows or whatever it might be. And at the end, they didn't get it. So, you know, does the succession planning, that level of communication, how does that alleviate or mitigate some of those issues upon the death of a parent or whatever?
In my experience, that piece of succession planning, working with a facilitator, really helps you understand what the process will be in terms of death, divorce, and disability. You know, if I decide that I really want to run off with this other person and go to Hawaii with them and spend the rest of my life on the beach, but my family kind of likes my husband, and they want to keep him as part of the operation, we were able to outline how that would happen. What would trigger a buy or a sell of shares in the operation? As well, we discussed death and divorce, disability. What would happen if someone became unable to work on the farm, whether it was through a farm accident or an accident off the farm? And so we were able to sit down and discuss without the pressure of those things being upon us, without someone being in the middle of a messy divorce, without someone being in the middle of a spouse who wants out of their piece of the company, you're able to discuss those vital pieces. As a young person, it was really important for us to be able to discuss what happens if mom passes away and dad remarries, and how that new family coming in, are they now a piece of this operation? Who can buy in? Who can't buy in? And so I think as long as everyone who is impacted by those decisions is sitting at the table, it can certainly alleviate some of the concerns regarding the future of the operation and how it will continue upon the death of someone or a remarriage or a divorce, whatever the case may be. I think it's worth its weight in gold just from a comfort standpoint of knowing what will the future of the operation hold.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that these conversations need to happen before death, and it should not be a surprise when a family member is deceased on what the inheritance is going to be, and oftentimes it is in farm families, and it just shouldn't be. These should be conversations that are not taboo, that should be happening on a regular, ongoing basis. I mentioned the use of a mediator for more difficult conversations as being a way to help facilitate that difficult conversation. And Paige, you reminded me of an important concept because I also do family law, that prenups are oftentimes a taboo as well. But with farm families, I think that prenups and postnups can be very appropriate in a wide variety of situations, just to help talk about things like what if one of the big D happens, and I don't mean Dallas. And also estate planning rights or estate rights are oftentimes memorialized in prenups and postnups as well.
Very good. Yes. Carrie, I think one thing that you brought up was in the prenup, postnup world and talking about in-laws and outlaws and all the laws that we like to we like to work with when we work with family members. And I think one of the things that we really run into in regards to succession planning is understanding if in-laws are going to be impacted by these decisions, they need to be at the table. And they need, if they are going to own a piece of the company, and it's really hard, I think a lot of folks want to rule from the grave. And that's something you can discuss with the help of your counsel on how you can make sure that the operation looks like it should in the future. But one thing, we not only need to make sure, I've been a daughter in an operation, and I've been a daughter-in-law in an operation both. And I think it's extremely important to value those folks who are not on the farm on a day-to-day basis. And maybe the most important meetings and communications we have in those succession planning steps is including those folks to make sure they understand what their future holds, because they really just want security. You want to know that if your children's future is secure and your future is secure. So I think as you talk about prenups and postnups, some of that security can be outlined in those documents. It can also be outlined by just simply, and I guess I should say that it's not outlined, the security can be had by simply understanding what the future of the operation looks like with or without them.
Well, I just had a couple of comments that I wanted to make was, there is a new trend right now in using mediators with farm, estate, and succession planning. And I love this idea because I'm actually a trained mediator myself. I'm on the mediation roster for New York and New Jersey. And so it's sort of an up-and-coming thing. So to help those families make those difficult transitions. So I just wanted to throw that out there for farm families that are looking for a unique way to sort of help solve that succession planning problem, you know, on their farm. Another comment that you made about different family members maybe not inheriting what his or her, what they thought that their fair share was, but oftentimes in farm families, they believe that they need to give their children equal shares. And, you know, this is common among parents, and especially with farm families. And I would say that farm heirs are not equally involved in their family operation. I am an off-farm heir, Like I'm an attorney. I was living in New York City for a decade. I've now relocated to Champaign, but I am an off-farm heir. And my brother has been living next to my parents' farm during the last 15 years while I've been off traveling and doing all sorts of things. And he's been there helping my father at our beef cattle operation every single week. And, you know, and yet, you know, my parents, as typical farm families, feel this desire to give us equal. And that is a very typical situation that's happening right now. And I would like to just challenge farms to look at, you know, what's really happening, what's going to really be the plan after the death, and is equal really equitable? And so I just wanted to challenge that, and perhaps the use of a mediator might be a good way to sort of resolve some sort of an equitable formula.
Carrie, let me ask a similar question based on estate planning and then succession planning. To Carrie, what's the biggest mistake that people may make in estate planning? And then to Paige, what's the biggest mistake that people make when they're doing their succession planning?
The biggest mistake that I see is they wait too long. And just 2 months ago, I had a farm family in my office, and you know, the father was in a nursing home, and they were wondering what's going to happen because they couldn't afford the bills. They were going to have to sell potentially part of the land to help pay for the nursing home. And had they thought these issues through 5, 7, 10 years ago, then the land could have been put in irrevocable trust. And there's a 5-year look back period with Medicaid or Medicare. And, you know, so waiting too long to get it done is the number one problem that I see. And the thing is that when you do it, like, you never know when you're going to need it, right? And so that's why, Paige, I guess I had a little bit of a difference of opinion at the very beginning of this, is because I'd rather people have something and then modify it as time goes on, because it's so easy just to put off. Nobody thinks like, oh, I'm going to die next week. I mean, and for some people it is imminent, but for most people it's so easy to just to put off for another day, another week, another year.
Absolutely. From the succession planning side of things, I would say some of the biggest mistakes that people make is not running the business as a business. Whether it be extremely messy financials, whether it be there's no written plan, dad has everything in his head, and when son wants to make a purchase, he goes to dad and gets a check and writes the check because the check is always going to be good. And there's just no way for that business to be in a succession plan when we don't even have up-to-date financials that are outside of a shoebox that's kept by mom. And so we have to make sure that when we are working with a succession plan, I think it's important to understand this is a business, and business is business, and family is family. And so I think lack of communication is a huge mistake that families make as well. Meetings are so very important. And I'm not talking at a truck hood. I'm talking at sitting down at a table with the financials from that week or from that month and reviewing purchases made, who made the purchase, why it was made, analyzing, especially when you have multiple siblings in a partnership or families in a partnership. You need to make sure that everyone understands where you're at and where you're going, what your future purchases might look like, and compare to-do lists. Because if Jim thinks that moving the cows is the most important thing, and John thinks that getting the corn in is the most important thing, and we keep getting corn in and we never get to those cows, we've just devalued that one partner. So having meetings and having that good communication is extremely important. That the almost, in my opinion, equally important meetings are those that involve all pieces in the partnership, the in-laws, the folks who are not involved with the day-to-day operation. Maybe it's a husband or maybe it's a wife. It doesn't matter which one doesn't participate in the farm and day-to-day. But one of the biggest problems we have experienced is when there is each family is doing their own thing, and as a non participating manager in the operation. So I go to work every day and I come home and my husband isn't there and he doesn't get there until 9 o'clock. And meanwhile, I'm looking at the clock and I realize that my husband's brother pulled out of the driveway at 5 o'clock to go to his child's t-ball game. Mm-hmm. And this is the third time this week we've had a t-ball game or practice and they've left early. And meanwhile, I'm taking care of all of the to-dos at home. And so I think that communication, if everyone is very clear in regards to vacation times, how much time you can spend at children's events. And I know that this sounds really harsh because we're talking about family now, but family is involved in this business and you would treat an employee with the same expectations you need to treat each of the partners in the business and outline, you know, when can you take vacations? I've talked with folks who said, oh, Dad just said the work will get done and the work has to be done, so you're going to be here. And this daughter-in-law was coming to me and saying, yes, the work will get done because my husband stays home and he does it while his brother has a good vacation and then goes to rodeos and then goes to t-ball events and whatever it may be. That person was feeling like they were getting paid the exact same amount, but the sibling was doing a percentage of the work. And so if on the flip side, if that daughter or daughter-in-law, or maybe it's a son, whoever it may be, would realize what the other person's responsibilities were in that communication line, they would certainly be more effective as an operation and as a family, both in knowing what everyone's responsibilities were and knowing that the pay everyone is receiving is equal to the amount of work that they're putting into the operation. So I definitely think communication is a big piece of that. What do you think, Terry? What other pieces have you seen when you've mediated things?
Well, you reminded me of a good point, something I've been hounding my father about, which I don't know if it's going to ever get done, but farm families don't really develop operations manuals. And it's something that even in my own business, my own law practice, that I'm trying to do. I'm trying to take all these little things that are in my head and memorialize it. I'm trying to develop an operations manual for my secretary, an operations manual for my associate attorney, and farms should do the same thing. My father runs the farm. My mom runs the books of my farm, of our family farm, right? This is kind of a very typical, you know, farm family. And I, if I had to go sit in either one of their chairs and to do their job for a week, I don't think I could. And, but if it was all memorialized, if my father was in the hospital, I'm not even talking about death, but if my father was in the hospital for a month, right, having those procedures, you know, the feeding rations, you know, things like that, those procedures memorialized would certainly help my brother and I, you know, be able to keep the farm up and running. We're very fortunate in the fact that we have extended family that would certainly pitch in, but the farm families need to be thinking about that. You also reminded me too, and I've seen things like vacation days and so on and so forth being set forth in the organizational documents of the business, whether or not it's set up as an LLC or a corporation or a partnership. And then also, you know, even when we talk about farm families, I think employee handbooks are a nice way to sort of, you know, have that written record of those of duties and responsibilities.
One of the things that I heard both of you kind of touch on that I wanted to follow up on, and that is kind of training the next generation, you know, for taking over some piece or all of the operation. And any other comments on that? Has that been an issue, kind of what you've seen, you know, whether it be on the law side or Paige, you know, back, you know, with the two family, you know, with being the daughter and the daughter-in-law in two different scenarios, you know, is training, you know, you mentioned, you know, the records in a shoebox, you know, everything was in Dad's head, you know, that's not necessarily getting the next generation ready. And I think, you know, as I get older and I've seen my father pass away, you know, he passed away with a lot of background knowledge, but at the same time, he did a really good job of training my brother, I think, to come along to take over the farm and the cattle operation.
Well, I'm curious, Scott, when did your father start training your brother?
Well, Dad made the conscious decision to retire, okay? And I think that that's one piece, all right? That, you know, he was physically, I think, still capable, but kind of getting towards the end of his career. And so that allowed then my brother to kind of transition while Dad was still there, okay, to ask the questions, to, you know, find out where the papers, all the legal documents and deeds and all those kinds of things, and, you know, make decisions on trading equipment and buying inputs and those kinds of things, so that when ultimately my dad passed away, there was, you know, that part of the transition was relatively easy. And, you know, I'll have to admit that I was probably part of what drove Dad, you know, and it was not an equal estate, all right, when it was passed on. My brother had the sweat equity involved. He had been there every day. You know, Carrie, I think, you know, you kind of identified that, you know, as part of, you've been off farm, all right, but your brother is there. And so is it really realistic? And I looked at it and I said, Dad, you know, you can help me get an education. Okay, I had the opportunity to do what I do, okay, with a salary. But my brother has made the farm his career. And it's only fair that my sister and I don't get that. So.
Yeah, I think that you bring up a good point. I guess. I don't think that there's any black and white rule on when that training needs to take place. And I think that in your family's situation, your father sort of made this conscious decision, I'm going to retire, I need to train my successor. And I think that training needs to be, like having those difficult conversations, it needs to be ongoing and trying to determine who's going to be that successor. Because at one point, like right now, my brother is living right next to my family and he's there every week, but he might meet some, you know, hot number and move to Colorado. I have no idea. And life's going to change, right? And if that happens. And so I think the training sort of needs to begin at an early stage. And sort of as years go on, shift that responsibility to the successor.
I would agree, Carrie. The sooner the better, because we can't ever foresee the future. We don't know if we're gonna go to California and meet that hot number, or whether we're gonna be there for the rest of our life and take over that operation and pass it on to our children. And so, in my opinion, And in our instances, all of the guys came home right out of college. They all have their bachelor's degree. They came home and they started working and starting that training, even when they're just working in high school or in college, whatever it may be, that training to think more as a manager and less as an employee is extremely important. Now, I don't want to devalue the experience as an employee, because I know when my brother came home from college, my dad said, that's great, you need to go find another job away from Johnson Farms, at least for a year. And my brother, he was not happy. He was not happy at all. That's all he'd ever done. That's all he ever wanted to do. And I think he felt like he was being put on the street corner. He went and he did that and he came back, and he will now say at almost 40 years old, I should have stayed away longer because I learned so many good things by doing that. I should have stayed away longer. And so I think it's really important. You don't have to shove them away for 10 years. I think when you shove people away for 10 years or something like that, they will lose touch with what your values and your vision are. But I do think getting them training to be able to be a good employee, because they need to be good to employees. If you potentially have employees, then coming back and learning every piece of the management. When you go into management in the business world, they don't just simply sit you in the manager position of what you'll be doing and call it good. They take you to all the different departments and they make you work within those to make sure you understand. And so maybe you're not the best mechanic, but you still have to know how to change oil. And you still have to know how to do proper maintenance and maybe some simple repairs so your repair bill isn't through the roof. So I think that that training, while it doesn't, there's, in my opinion, there's a piece of the business plan that has responsibilities and who is responsible for what, and that is definitely an evolving plan through that should be reviewed and changed year after year. That the piece of hands-on training, that is so valuable for the older generation to ensure the future of the operation.
I think a lot of people, look at the succession planning as being very expensive. We're talking about lawyers, we're talking about estate planners, we're talking about mediators. So let's kind of go back to the beginning and say, okay, what should be the first steps for a family that does not have a good succession plan in place? What's the first step before I ever get to the point where I have to start spending some money to make this a little bit more formalized?
Well, our first step, and my, I guess my suggestion to everyone is to seek the help of those mediators or those facilitators that can help you answer some of those tough questions. Because believe it or not, they do cost some money up front, but they are cheap in comparison to going back and changing documents with your attorney over and over because you got it wrong, because you didn't think about it. The other piece of it in my mind is you also don't want to make mistakes along the way that maybe someone doesn't want to be involved, or maybe they wanted to be involved at a different level than they're currently involved and they're just going with the flow. So I think, in my opinion, I think that facilitator can help people avoid expenses in the long run and even some of those legal fees that come with folks not knowing what the future holds. It is an expensive process. From my personal experience, I can assure you there is some money spent, but it pales in comparison to not planning. And even if you just go and have an estate plan and you don't do any facilitation and you don't do any mediation and you just have that estate plan, something in writing is better than nothing at all. You have to make sure that you get that not only planned out, but put down on paper in a legal document so that folks don't have to spend money on the other end when you aren't there trying to fight for what you wanted because you didn't make it clear.
Oh, come on. We're worth every single penny, right?
Sorry, Carrie.
Yes, I know. Lawyers are not cheap. But I do believe when it comes to business planning and estate planning that this is not the time to get a Walmart lawyer, to try to save your pennies. It's sort of being a penny wise and a pound foolish. What's most important here is that you get the right plan, and if you get the right plan in place, I believe that's going to save the family money and perhaps relationships, which you can't really put a dollar figure on in the long run. So one of the first things that I do when clients come into my office is that I ask them what their business model is, or their business organization. So that's probably the simplest way to start. You'd be surprised how many clients that come in here in my office with very large agriculture operations, and they're running as a sole proprietorship. And forming a simple LLC or corporation can certainly help. And I believe that business planning overlaps with estate planning. And I mentioned the use of trust before, but ownership units of an LLC, for example, can be put into a trust. So all of these things can certainly work together. And business formation is a fairly simple and, I believe, cost-effective way to sort of limit liability. And it can be useful for the estate planning method as well. Perhaps in theory, like my parents could own a large percentage of my family's farming operation. My brother and I can have a very small percentage. And then perhaps after the years go on, they could sort of transition some of that ownership to my brother and I. That would be one strategy that can sometimes be used. That's a little bit more of a simple start with business planning. And then with estate planning, sort of I tend to take things a little bit in layers. Perhaps get a very simple will, get a simple power of attorney, and then when the budget allows, go the next step, perhaps then we have a revocable trust. And so things with farm, estate, and succession planning can happen in stages as the budget allows and as time goes on.
One thing Carrie said that I really agree with is you don't need to go the Walmart route. I would completely agree with that. You are going to spend some money, but if you have a $15, $20 million operation, or maybe it's just a $5 million operation, the amount of money that you spend to get the right people will pale in comparison to all of the problems and expenses that it could cost you if you don't get the right people. And I would really encourage people as you work with folks, if you don't, talk with your friends and your neighbors, the folks who have been through these different transitions and succession planning, estate planning. Find the folks who know about agriculture law. Find the Carries of the world who can help you and have experience and knowledge. And then also make sure you're comfortable with them, because there are others out there. If you don't really like your facilitator, or you don't really like your attorney or your CPA, then find someone you're very comfortable with, because there's a lot of personal information shared during these experiences. And if you're not comfortable, then you very likely won't share all that information, and that is detrimental to the process. So that's certainly one thing I would tag on. I really agree with the theory that you have to get high-quality people to have a high-quality job done.
So what do I need to have before I come to you as a financial planner or as a mediator? What should I have done for a homework prior to bringing you in? I mean, obviously, I'm probably going to be paying on a per-hour basis. All right, so what do I need?
Well, for my consultations, you don't need to bring in a big estate planning questionnaire. That's just an initial consultation that I have with you. But after we are engaging, then, okay, Carrie, I want you to work on these various documents with me. At that point, I do have my clients fill out an estate planning questionnaire where I can get a better idea about the assets, the debt, the business entities that exist, and sort of what you are thinking about how you want your farm to be passed from one generation to the next. So there's no homework per se before that initial meeting.
Is there any value in putting together a team, in addition to immediate family and extended family? Should you include other people in this process?
So when we went through the process, we certainly found value in a team. We first met with our facilitator and went through some of the different questions and challenges that we wanted to make sure that we had outlined before we went on to CPAs and attorneys. From there, we did hire a team, and we put them all in the same room. I think it's important to have your CPA, your attorney, the lending agency, if you have one. I'm sure most people don't, but we did. And so it's really important to have those integral, very valuable pieces of your team there at the table. Maybe it's a risk management protection officer. Maybe it's professionals for your operation, whether it be a production consultant or manager that advises you on crops, let's say. Those folks can really provide value to the process, and they can move you in the right direction instead of one person saying, well, you should do this, and then the CPA says, no, that won't work tax-wise. If you can get everybody in the room together, that is worth its weight in gold to us. To us it was, anyways, when we went through that process.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think that there certainly needs to be input from other types of professionals. An analogy that I wanted to highlight with estate planning was from an ag lawyer in Iowa, Pat Dillon. And in his book, he talks about estate planning is like juggling, right? So all the balls can't be at the top at the same time. And it's sort of like your goals. So with estate planning, there's going to be different goals, and you can't get them all met all at the same time. You have to sort of strategize on what is the most important to you, and what is the most important to that particular person or that farm is going to change as time goes on, which is why it's so important for the conversations to happen. But in having those conversations with the different balls in the air, getting the input from the different professionals is certainly worthwhile.
Any other last thoughts? This has really been a good discussion, I think an eye-opening discussion. Any last thoughts on the whole process of estate planning, succession planning, making sure that that ranch or that farm stays a viable, sustainable family business if the family chooses that wants to do so?
I think from my position that farms tend to want to go to their local attorney who's in their hometown. Perhaps that attorney has been working with them for generations. That may or may not be the right fit for that particular farm family's estate plan. You want to work with a professional who really does estate planning, who understands agriculture, which may or may not be that local attorney. So just try to do the homework, ask the tough questions to the attorney, interview him or her, find out how much farm succession and estate planning he or she really has done, to try to see if it's the right fit.
I definitely think from the younger generation, looking up to the older generation, I probably have a different perspective than maybe some of the folks that are from the older generation looking down. So I guess if I could talk with the older generation, some things I would say is don't make promises early, and don't say things that you can't make happen. In other words, this will all be yours someday is a terrible thing to say to children, because you don't know which ones will be interested, and you don't know how their life may change or how they may develop, and whether you like that type of person and their lifestyle or not. Those things may change, and so don't make promises early that you can't carry forward in the future. Also, be sure to be clear and be willing to write down when you are ready to make some promises and you are ready to turn over some responsibility and turn over the reins. Be very clear. Have them in writing. Hire professionals. Get folks like Carrie involved to be able to make sure that it happens like you want it to happen, and that you are able to protect the family members that you're trying to make a future for and leave a legacy to. Expect to be uncomfortable. This process, there's a lot of tough decisions to be made, both on both sides of the table. And so you have to realize that you are going to be a little uncomfortable. But if you're a little uncomfortable now and very happy later, it is worth a lot to be able to know what your future holds or what the legacy that you're leaving will look like. The last thing I will say is family is family and business is business. At the end of the day, the most important thing that we all have is our family. And so I think it's really important to realize I may say something to you out on the farm that is said in a way that I may not say the same thing to you when we're at home cooking supper together. And so that and it can look very different if it's a husband and wife or if it's a sister and a sister-in-law working cattle together. Business is business and family is family. And at the end of the day, family is very, very important and should be valued highly. So these discussions are very necessary.
Well, thank you very much. I think that wraps up this edition of the Beef Roundtable. Please join us next month for another look at the issues and trends that affect you. Thank you for joining us.